So, does work define us? Or is it just a source of income? Do our jobs leave us broken and empty? Or do they actually fill a void? Do we even have realistic expectations about our careers? Or are we setting ourselves up for failure? Are we born dreamers who just can't stop dreaming? Or have we blindly accepted our fate? Let's be honest, at some point, we've all asked these questions. Maybe last week, or last year, or maybe right now. You're not alone. My name is Rocco Lungarello. I am a professional writer who has been plagued with these questions from the inception of my career. And though I've been on a personal exploration to find answers, I think it's time to shut off my brain, strike up some meaningful conversations, and find out once and for all that the answers to these questions have always lied within those that surround us. Our coworkers, our brothers, our friends, our wives. This is Where I Work, a podcast long overdue. So shut off your television and open your ears.
We met at Southern, and I'm going to say we met in, like, intro to acting. I think that's the class we had to go.
That's right. Oh, my God.
And I honestly don't remember how we... And it's something... I think it's something as lame, but also as just so sweet as we sat next to each other in class.
So that was easily 10 years ago.
More. Wow, really?
Yeah, I mean, I graduated in 2003 from Southern.
Yeah, I graduated in 2005-ish?
I think that was my junior year. So, if I had to guess, I would say 2001, because it happened around the year of September 11th.
Did it?
Yeah, that was the year that we met.
Wow, there's an omen, huh?
Yeah, my whole life.
Oh, are you saying it's our fault?
I remember when you do that thing where you would take your arm and put yourself on a flagpole and make it look like the wind was blowing you around.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
That was my move. Didn't get me anywhere with the ladies, but I'm glad you liked it.
I did like it. Acting class? Oh my God.
It was intro to acting.
That did for me. I think I took that class for an easy A.
Easy A, yeah.
But you actually were good at it.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
So why did it take you so long to do acting or comedy or any of that stuff? Because that was 2002.
Yeah.
I remember we would talk and I would ask you, I'm like, what do you do? You should be a comedian. Like, you should be doing something. You should be doing this and that and the other. And it wasn't working. You weren't feeling it.
Yeah, there are a couple of different answers for that. One is, like, comedy was something I promised myself to get me through school, because I did not, like, Southern, I'm just going to name the university. Southern was, by the time I got back into college, like, I had been away, I think I was 21 by the time I got back into made a decision to go back to school. So I'd been away from school long enough that, like, when I went back, I was really excited to be there. Mm. And Southern kind of beat that right out of me. So, like, it was, you know, I had a great attitude going in, and then my attitude got worse and worse and worse. And then comedy was the thing that, like, it was always in the back of my mind, and I wouldn't let myself do it until I graduated, because I knew I'd never finish school if I did.
You got your degree in communications, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And before that, you went to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting?
Yes. Yes. And I was an intern for WPLR back when... An FM radio station, yes. And it was
Who was that guy? I remember I used to listen to the guy that you met.
There was...
Because he went on to AM for a while.
When I was an intern, I interned for Smith and Barber, were the morning show guys, and Brian Smith, you told me about
Brian Smith,
he was a great guy, and I lost contact with him.
They ended up firing him.
They really?
Yeah.
When Smith and Barber, the story I got when Smith and Barber parted ways, because they were a partnership that I don't remember how they crossed paths and got linked up, but they were partners like police detectives were partners, not necessarily, you know, liking each other, but their they partnership
just worked well together.
Yeah. So that's what, and that's what started happening with their radio gig. And they actually went down to Florida for, you know, cause they got a better offer, and then they came back to Connecticut, and like they legitimately moved back and forth as a team, because that was the only way they could function, or that was the way they would get booked and make money.
That was their act, right?
Yeah. So when they came back to Connecticut, they've been doing it for a while. And when you and I were talking, Bruce Barbara wanted out, and like the partnership kind of dissolved after that. So I don't. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got. Kind of just let that story end. You should probably cut that out, because it's not...
Yeah, I'll cut that shit out of that. So the... the... Because I like that idea, because I feel like I was similar, where you went back to school. When you went to college, you didn't go from high school to Southern. You kind of right. took a little time.
Right.
And then when you went back,
yeah.
you actually wanted to be there.
Yeah.
And it was something you were paying for yourself, even, right?
Yeah. Still am.
Still am? So what are you doing now? What's your career now?
Oh, that's saying career is what kills me.
What's your job? What's your big boy job?
My big boy job, which is, my big boy job is I teach ballroom dancing.
Yeah.
And that's the job that I enjoy, and it pays my bills. Meanwhile, still trying to figure out how to get comedy to be my full-time gig.
So you're like Patrick Swayze, kind of, right?
Yeah.
From Dirty Dancing.
Yeah. Well,
not from.
Well, I was thinking like Next of Kin.
Roadhouse.
Oh. That's
Next of Kin.
Yeah, that's a deep cut. That's Patrick Swayze and Liam Neeson. Oh yeah, look it up. You're welcome.
Holy shit! No. All right. So what are you? That you? I think I saw that. I was creeping on your LinkedIn profile.
I haven't touched that literally since I set it up.
I know.
But what does it say?
Well, it just said that you've been there 10 years.
Yeah, that's about right.
What goes on in your at a dance studio job?
At a dance studio job. Well, in terms of what do I do, or what, I guess start there with the nuts and bolts and
yeah, like there. What? Yeah, do you have like clients, or how does it work?
Yeah, it the way it works is. The studio I work for, and I'm not going to say names for...
Yeah, no, I get it.
Okay. So the way the studio operates is there's a teaching system which is built off of private and group instruction. So the idea is you build up... Your clientele are members of the studio, and they have a primary instructor who works with them one-on-one. And then there are group classes where the students work together as a student body with one instructor teaching the class. And then there are also inside events and outside events, being inside and outside of the studio, where they're all dance related events. And there are even those competitions that you see, like where people are all dressed up and mm-hmm. dance with numbers on their back. Yeah, I do that too.
Didn't you do a Dancing with the Stars for Connecticut?
I did.
Who was your partner?
We did a couple, and it was for Mothers Against Drunk Driving as a charity. The first one I did was, I did two or three. The last one we did was with Sonia Bagdaddy from WTNH. And the first one I did was with, that's going to bug me, I can't remember her name. She was like a sportscaster on ESPN.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Still?
She might still be there.
So dance instructor, well, you have strange hours, right? You don't work 9 to 5.
No, I don't work 9 to 5. I work my day typically starts at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and goes anywhere until 11 o'clock at night or later sometimes.
Is it a salary job?
It's a combination of I get paid hourly for the lessons that I teach. I get paid for, there's an hourly component to it for, you know, like what I teach and when we do, whenever we do events, like how long I'm technically working, you know, working for. And then there's also a commission component for, because part of my job is sales and selling dance lessons. So,
okay. So does that job, in the 10 years that you've been doing it, I would think if you're staying somewhere that long, there's an element to it that you enjoy.
Yes. There's actually a lot of things that I like what I do. I really do. And that's why it's been so difficult to wrap my head around how this fits in with what I want from comedy. Because with dancing, what I get personally out of it is that the act of dancing itself is something that I never expected to ever be a part of, you know, like I just stumbled into it, and there's a gratification of, I like the physicality of it. There's a gratification of it's creative, it's artistic. And like, I am a movement junkie. Before I ever even knew that dance was a thing, I was in and out of the martial arts since I was like 15 years old. And I always loved that kind of sport, you know. It wasn't a team sport. It was an individual thing. And it was always based on, like, yeah, like I said, I just like movement.
Sure.
So there's that component to it. And
but isn't there a lot of that in martial arts, like where you have to memorize the, what is that stuff? I never did it, but don't you have to like memorize these movements in order to pass for a belt?
Depending on what my experience with them were, they were called forms. Sometimes they were called I've been away from it a while, so I'm kind of talking out of my ass here. Mm-hmm. So take it with a grain of salt. But you learn what they call forms, which are patterns of movement that you memorize, and they're set to develop a certain, they're created to develop a skill set. So you learn these patterns of movements and you demonstrate them. And the idea of, like, if I just relate it to, say, throwing a punch, like learning how to do a certain form teaches you the correct mechanics of how to throw a punch.
Okay.
And that's what that's how you learn that skill. And then the idea of getting a belt is you demonstrate it for someone who, you know, the instructor, the sensei, and you have to satisfy them that you learned what you're supposed to learn about how to throw a punch.
Okay, so you're demonstrating the techniques for them.
Exactly.
So there's a lot, I could see that directly translating then for
dancing. It absolutely does. There was a time when, so a couple of years back, I was studying Aikido, and I was still...
Is that that furniture store in New Haven?
No. Dick.
Oh, that's Ikea.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That was good. Look at you.
Hey.
Look at you. So, any crap. So, I was studying the martial arts.
Okay.
And the way to get into the dojo, the Aikido gym... I'm trying so hard not to use like terms like dojo. There is no pain in this dojo, but whatever.
Nah, fucking Karate Kid reference.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome. That's what I would. I know what you mean when you say a dojo.
Good.
There's no pain.
So I was
sweep away.
Yeah.
All right. Wow.
So I was taking lessons. I was studying Aikido at this dojo. And I was taking morning classes because, you know, I work the second half of the day. And the first day we get in there, it's me and a group of like 8 of the biggest, burliest guys that I've ever seen in my life. Because I'm just a little dude. Like I'm 5, my license is 5'8", but I'm really 5'7". And, you know, 160 some odd pounds. So
it's I am Michael J. Fox stature.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm a little taller than him.
I don't know how tall he is. But most actors are, that's like the magic number. If you're 5'8", you're an actor.
Really?
Like every actor is 5'8" or under.
I, used to think I was a normal size human being. I thought I was an average size. I'm tiny. I'm weak.
But you know, like, who's that guy that was in that movie with Jon Favreau, Swingers? What's his name?
Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, like he's like I think 6'2".
Yeah, he's tall.
But that's not. But in Screw the movie you. Industry, he looks like a fucking giant. But he really isn't. He's 6'2", 6'3". I mean, that's tall.
How tall are you?
Like, on a good day with shoes, I'm 6'1". But that's not, like, towering, you know? But if... It's just funny. Like, Al Pacino wore lifts, and he had the camera guy always shoot angles where they didn't show his height. And the same thing with Stallone.
Because he's, like, really a leprechaun.
Yeah, like, Stallone is, like, 5'8". But he looks like he's...
Stallone really does look like he's 8 feet tall.
Yeah, you would never know.
Wow.
Okay, getting off track. But what's cool is when you got into the dance, did you have to take lessons yourself?
I am actually a product of the company that I work for, because I'd never danced before in my life, and they trained me. I learned through their method, and they trained me, and I still train. You know, it's one of those things you constantly train. There's always room for development and growth. So, but yeah, I learned specifically with the intent of being a teacher. So
cool. So you're not only, because you know, a lot of the things I'm trying to figure out with the show are people, are they following a path for them? Are they going against the grain, or are they not listening to their intuition? And it sounds like you were following something, right?
I was, and that's the idea of okay, following intuition. How I stumbled into this job was I randomly ran into a kid that I graduated high school with. It's like 2 years after the fact, or whatever, after high school, and bumped into him at a party. His name was Doug. And I said, Doug, what are you doing with your life? And he said, I teach.
How old are you?
I was easily in my 20s. I think I might have been 21.
Okay.
You know, I asked him what he was up to, and he said, I teach ballroom dancing. And my, swear to God, the actual words that came out of my mouth were, bullshit, you liar, no one does that for a living. Mm. So he was like, come on by, man, I'll prove it. And I did, and I just never left. It was one of those things that, it was always something I wanted to learn how to do. And this seemed like a good vehicle to do it. And I never intended to be in it as long as I have been. So.
That's awesome. Plus you're an instructor too, you know, that people forget the value in that and how rewarding it is to teach.
And it's really, that's one of the things that kind of floored me is how much I enjoy teaching. Because I'd had teaching jobs before, but always like teaching. I taught swimming for a little while, and when I got into that, I started as a lifeguard and became a swim instructor. And it was one of those things that it was just a way to make more money. And then when I found it, I started enjoying it. And, you know, I got, without trying to sound egotistical, it's a natural fit for me. I'm a good teacher. So this job kind of had the same thing. Like there's a physical component to it. There was very definitely a creative artistic component to it. And then there was that teaching aspect to it, which again, so it's been really good, but the intuition part that you mentioned before, like I really love comedy and performance and that kind of stuff. Like if I had more balls, I would have done that sooner and a lot harder.
Well, you don't think it takes balls to be on stage doing a dance performance with judges and...
Yeah, it does. It's just a different kind of thing. Like there's the stuff you do because the people watch you do and you're like, "Oh my God, I can never see myself doing that." And you do it because now it's just natural. It's a part of your world. And then there's the stuff that you think the stuff that scares you that you avoid. Like we all have that. Yeah. And one of my students is a cop, and we talked about this one time. We were talking about doing, getting him to dance in front of people. And he's like, I don't want to do it. It terrifies me. But you've been shot at. And he's like, yeah, I'd rather do that. That's nothing. Like, wow. So it's like that kind of thing. Like, it's the stuff that scares you isn't necessarily the stuff that scares other people.
Yeah.
So when I say having balls, it's like having the balls to go after something that I really, really love. And, you know, having the balls to either succeed at it or fail, which I've been chipping away at it, but...
When you say comedy, you're talking about stand-up?
Yeah, stand-up and just... Yeah.
Okay, before we start talking about that,
okay.
Because I'm so interested in that, and you know that, but the... you've never worked in an office before.
No, God, no.
Do you love that? Do you, yes. Like, hold that above people?
I am so happy with that. Like,
that's such a freaking feat to go through your life.
I made a conscious decision that I never wanted. It dawned on me one day when I had to put together a resume. I was looking for work, and it just hit me that...
You just started using crayons?
What? And what hit me was any job I need a resume to get is not a job I want. So my technical degree is in creative message construction, which, what? Yeah, I thought I wanted to make like commercials. And the problem was I wanted to be in commercials. So I instantly got bored and I didn't want to do it anymore.
Oh, I see. You wanted to be you wanted to do the acting component.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your first experience on a stage doing stand-up like?
It was terrifying and amazing, and it was one of those things where it was so important but incredibly insignificant at the same time. Like, I went to... the first experience I had to go to, I had to take a class. Like, I didn't have the balls to just get up and do an open mic. I went to New York and took a class in stand-up comedy. And, oh crap, I'm totally now just remembering the order of this. I did this class at a comedy club in New York, I think early on in my collegiate career, maybe just before I got into college. And that's what got me, that's what I kept going back to in Southern to get me to graduate. I'm like, I already had this under my belt, and that's how I knew I wanted to do comedy. Mm. So yeah, I went to Gotham Comedy Club in New York City, took their comedy class, and like the first time I was on stage to do comedy in front of people that, you know, weren't a mirror, was a comedy class and a working comic. And it was that, because it was a class environment, like there were nerves, but it was different. It's the same way as, like, you know, in creative writing, sharing your work with
peers.
Yeah. It's not that it's not its own kind of, creates its own kind of nerves, but it's just, it's different because you're around the people in the same situation as you.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So, like, that I loved. I loved, I loved, I loved. And the response was positive. Like,
Was it a couple days or how long was it?
It was a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And it ended with, the way the class ended was, we actually got to do, everyone in the class got to do a set at Gotham on a Thursday night in the main room. Because Gotham has two rooms, the big room and then there's a basement. So, I mean, and that was amazing. That, getting to do that, like, I remember, and again, this is not really to brag, but maybe a little bit. We didn't, when we got there, the whole time we'd been working on this act and getting advice on, you know, performance tips and maybe some writing tips and some ways to, like, the guy would give us his experience about, okay, this is what I did and this is where comedy comes from me. And he wasn't like, this is how you be funny. It was, he would just question stuff like, okay, well, why is that funny to you? And blah, blah, blah. So you really were developing your own act. And come the night of the performance, he pulls everyone aside and gives them their, you know, he lets us know what the order is. And I was up first and I was,
yikes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Steve Mandarinos was the name of the comic, the teacher. He pulled me aside and he goes, listen, I know you're shitting a brick right now. I want you to know why I chose you to go first. You are good. You're solid. And he gave me compliments. He said, you are the way this show needs to start. Everything else after you is going to be stronger because of you. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like one of those.
What a compliment.
Yeah, it really.
And it gave you the courage to push through, right?
It certainly helped. So.
So how big of a crowd would you say?
100. There had to be at least 100 plus people in the room.
Okay.
So.
I'm just trying to get a picture of that.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things that. One, my memory is not great. And two, it's also one of those things where it could have been like 8 people, but it felt like 1,000,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I don't really remember how many people were there, but I do remember that when I walked up on stage and
I would be sweating like,
yeah,
big time.
Yeah. It was nerve wracking, but at the same time it was exhilarating.
Did you have your set planned and ready to go and memorized?
Yep.
And how long was it?
I want to say it was 5 minutes.
Okay. How did it go over?
It went... Somewhere I actually had this on tape, the recording of it. It went well. Like, I got laughs where I was trying to get laughs. It was, without a doubt, the best feeling I've ever had in my life.
Wow. Like when, seriously.
Yeah. Because to have that, like to get the laugh, it's so validating. It's so validating. And I'm 5 of 6 kids, and my parents' relationship was not good by the time I got around. Like that was pretty much the beginning of the end. And rather than getting divorced, they stuck together for the kids, at least ostensibly. And the environment just started to get toxic. So there was not a lot of, and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to shit all over my parents. They did the best they could. And I do love my parents and I love my family. It's just everybody was having a bad time. Like no one was happy. And shit rolls downhill. So, when you're 5 of 6, you get a lot of crap. And then, here's the kicker. You don't really get to dump it on the baby because everybody protects the baby. So
you're the one before.
Yeah. So I got a lot of shit.
Almost like a version of the middle child.
Yeah. Yeah. So... It's okay, Charlie. I've healed since then.
He's like, no, it'll be okay. He wants to hug you.
Oh, and I want to hug him. So, the whole point of this is why comedy was so amazing is, you grow up in an environment where you're constantly being told to, cut that out, that's stupid, shut up. And you get to a point where you get to share an idea with people and they respond positively and they're like, yeah, that's a really, I never thought of it like that. Or that's a good idea. We want to hear what you have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, that was amazing. That was amazing. Never had anything like that to that degree in my life. So, that's like heroin. I'm hooked. And I was getting that. If everybody's seeking that validation, and the only way you have, if let's say you're a little kid, and the only way you have to get noticed by your parents or have them like be proud of you, show you love, is by winning awards, be it through sports or academics, or just every time you get an A, you get the pat on the head that you so desperately want. Like, you're going to, for the rest of your life, you're going to seek that out. And that's how you're going to get it, is through achievement.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever that... If you're a sports person and you get that attention, you get that validation through sports, you're going to make sports a huge part of your life. If you are someone who gets that, if you get to do it creatively through music, you're going to make music a huge part of your life. If you're someone who doesn't get it and you get negative attention, like the only time you get validation or someone pays attention to you is when you're causing trouble, you're going to cause trouble for the rest of your life.
Sure.
So I don't think, I think creative people are fortunate enough to find that outlet through what we would consider like a healthy channel. Be it writing, music, dance, art, mm-hmm. where others do not. Like people who succeed, who are driven by money.
Are you one of those?
No, I have issues with money. It's not my end all beat all, but at the same time, I'm not going to say I don't care, because I'd rather have money than not. Mm-hmm. But I do hate asking for money. I loathe it. And that's what pays the bills for me right now, that the sales component took me a long time to get to a place where I could be comfortable with that aspect of my job. And the only way I can be comfortable with it is to make my job about the things that I enjoy, the teaching and the dancing, and you know, I get sales through service rather than trying to sell people stuff.
Are you good where you are now? Are you at a point where you're kind of like, what does this all mean? All that stuff. Or are you okay where you're because you have a job that pays the bills, but you have an outlet for your creative side as well.
And that's what's so seductive about staying where I am right now, like staying exactly as I am, because I have, in many ways, I have something that provides a lot of what I'm looking for. And yes, it's paying for me to live my life. But at the same time, it's not everything I want. It's not the unicorn, you know? It's a good looking horse.
What? Yeah. It's just a hot horse.
Yeah, it's a really sexy horse.
What is the unicorn? It would be doing comedy full time.
If I'm being 100% honest, it'd be the act of. I love comedy and I love performance, and I like those two. If comedy led to something else, like I would explore it.
What did your parents do for a living?
My dad was, he worked for Blue Cross and Blue Shield. He was somewhere he was a manager of credit and collections. So he had a 9-to-5, white collar job. My mom was a teacher. She was a stay at home mom for a while. Like the parents I had versus the parents my older siblings had were very different, because my dad had one job and my mom had one job. She was a teacher. He was a manager, and she eventually became a stay-at-home mom. She ran a daycare out of her house. I vaguely remember that. But by the time I remember, like 12, 13 years old, between the two of them, my parents were working five jobs. So,
holy shit.
Yeah, man. And they were like my dad still kept his 9-to-5, but he also was a janitor. He was a butcher. He worked at the local grocery store behind their meat counter, and. Yeah, so we could do that on the weekends, and then he had a night job where he was.
Well, you had what, five kids?
Six.
Six.
Yeah.
So that's not really easy to provide for them.
Well, and here's the kicker too. This wasn't something until I found out. My parents only recently got divorced. Like they've been divorced maybe a year and a half, 2 years now, and they should have gotten divorced about 20 years ago. Part of why they stayed together is my mom has, we assume, there's no real proof, but it's one of those like, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out what happened. My mom has a bit of a gambling problem, And my parents have had their house foreclosed. Like, they lost the house when the market tanked.
And it opened, like, 2009.
Yeah. And they the bank foreclosed on their house. But, you know, enough time had gone by, they should have owned the house. The reason they didn't own the house is because they were going into debt significantly.
And just, like, taking loans off the house.
Taking loans off the house and taking loans off of my father's 401k. So, like, financially, they were never, again, knowing now, they were never solvent. Like, my entire life, my parents were just in debt up to their eyeballs. So that's why, and providing for, you know, six kids, that's why they...
What effect did that have on you? And your perspective on what work should be and finances? And
it's a great question. There was a time when, like, I have issues with money. Like I said, I hated money. I hated money because I saw it as just such a big point of contention between my parents and everyone in my family. It seemed like everything that we, all the bad crap came from money. And I've matured. I understand the importance of money. I understand that money is not an evil thing. I still, like, I hate asking for money, but I'm not so naive as to be like, oh, everything should be free and people should share. That's bullshit. Money makes the world go round. So I see it now as a tool, a means to an end. And it's one of those things that it's an unpleasantness that I will deal with because I know I have to. And at some point I'd like it to be, you know, less unpleasant. As much as I have, you know, like I hate a lot of the way I grew up. Like, I hated being, and we weren't poor. We just were lower middle class. Mm-hmm. So not to disrespect people who had to, you know, who know really what poverty is. As much as I hated where I grew up, I haven't really worked my ass off to get beyond it. Like, on paper, I'm living the same level as where I grew up. I don't work, you know, I make enough to live where I live, to have what I have, but I'm not rolling in dough.
Yeah. Nor am I.
Yeah, but I mean, it's and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the fact of the matter is to change your situation requires a lot of work. And the allure of where you are, whether it's great or whether it's bad, is incredibly powerful. And that gets back into, you know, in terms of what I consider balls to go after what you want. It's the pull, it's the safety of the status quo. Because what you have, even if it's shitty, is always, always so much safer and less scary than the unknown. Even if the unknown is something great.
So what's, like, your short-term career plan, like, five-year plan? Do you have any idea?
What I have to do, and again, what I know I need to do is the idea of being fulfilled by... I'm very much the same way. Maybe this is where creative people versus, you know, what we're defining as non-creative people differ is... I'm hearing you say the same thing. Like, I very much define myself by what I do. And the idea of just a job doesn't exist for me. Like, I have a job, but it's not what I want to be for the rest of my life. And what I want to be for the rest of my life is what I want my job to be. Like, actually, the idea you had career before. The idea of having a career terrifies me. Like, I don't want to have just one thing that I do forever and ever and ever. I want to...
Like, continuously evolve?
Yes. And the idea of going into something like comedy or performance is to have a career path that lets me pursue whims is what I want. Like, my job dancing, I never, ever, ever thought I'd be doing it as long as I have done. And I still, like, if you look at me on paper, you'd be like, yeah, your career, that's your career. And that never occurs to me. It never does. Not that I don't like it. It's just, so where the frustration where I am now, that to get back to where do I see myself in a couple of years, I have to keep going with what I'm doing now, with dancing, because it does. It is paying my bills. And my boss has always been good to me. And he's certainly earned my loyalty. I couldn't just up and leave him. And for my students, like, I couldn't just up and leave them. So what I see myself doing in respect to dance is finding a way to make myself a removable piece. And I still want to keep dancing in my life. There, the company I work for, there is opportunity to be someone who's like a traveling consultant within the business. If I could script everything out, I would train a replacement for myself where I am, get to a place where I can still move within the business so I can keep it relevant in my life, you know, as a consultant. But I would, at the same time, be doing comedy full time. Like, that's my pipe dream, I guess.
What if you gave us give us one of your bits?
One of my bits?
Yeah, unless it's, if you don't want it, you don't.
No,
want
it's to. It's. I don't mind. It's
like maybe like one of your jokes or bits that you just that you always have.
I'm more than happy to. With one of the things I truly am happy with, it's funny when it comes to. Okay, when it comes to comedy, when it comes to my act, one of the things that, and thank you, by the way, because that's what I'm about to say. I don't want you to take it the wrong way, because you did not just do that. One of the things I get when I tell people I'm a comedian is, oh, tell me a joke. And that's why I said you did not just do that. You didn't. Because the way you put it, the way understanding that it's not like, want to give me a bit. It's not tell me a joke. Tell me a joke is like, okay, a man walks into a bar.
Yeah.
And you just asked me to display some of my work, which I'm actually very honored that you did that. So, you know, well done. One of the things that has happened with me in my writing is when I started, I was so determined to be squeaky clean. Like I loved, like Cosby. And other comedians that I was drawn to were all just clean as a whistle. And that meant all my writing came from my head. Where recently, I've gotten more in touch with writing from the heart. So I'm not dirty. I'm not blue. I'm like light blue. I've got two different ideas I'm going to give you.
You could, like, hold the mic if you want
to. Yeah, I kind of do. Now I'm trying to think of, like, a good example. Because... so one of the pieces, like, I'm actually pretty proud of this one. I remember the exact moment I wrote it. Shit. Now I'm actually... this is weird, because I'm telling it one person.
Yeah, I could turn around. I can.
No, it's fine. It's weird. It's
difficult. I got it, man.
So you're going to... we'll go take two.
Yeah,
this is stupid. I actually need to stand up. So how do you throw away a garbage can? It's not a riddle I'm actually asking. I bought a new garbage can. I can't get rid of the old one. I tried leaving it out on the curb, but the trashmen, they didn't take it. Came out the next day. There's two cans, no garbage. So I even tried putting the old can inside the new can, but I still had to throw out my trash. So I put the trash inside the old can, which is inside the new can. Came out the next day, two cans, no garbage. This time, I figured it out. Put the old can inside the new can. I put the garbage inside the old can. And on the old can, I wrote a note. It said, garbage. Came out the next day, two cans and a new note. It said, duh. So that was like... yeah, that's.
Was that legit? Did you really try to do that?
Well, I wrote the joke. I wrote the joke because of. I was driving to work, and I saw on a street corner that, you know, I'm sitting at a red light. There was a garbage can inside another garbage can, and this whole thing like everything I just said to you just kind of came tumbling out because my brain just took that idea of like, well, you heard where my brain took it. And that's why it's so weird to talk about like being proud of my work. And when I talk about being proud of my work, I'm proud in a way, like, you know how when you find like a really good restaurant, you get really excited to tell people and you're like, oh dude, you got to check this out. Yeah. Not like you are the restaurant, but like you discovered it and you get to share it with people. Like that's the kind of pride I have right now in that joke. Like, cause that moment came, it's like I discovered that thought or that whatever, that situation. And now I get to tell people that, and I'm proud of it.
That's cool.
Some of my writing, I was saying before, again, I've been writing more from the heart, which means I've been writing about stuff that really just ticks me off or, yeah, things I've been angry about. And then I have to go back later and find the humor in it. And I've been talking a lot about being frustrated with women. And it's just our expectations. So the bit for this one, I don't hate women. I just hate women. You're so frustrating. And our expectations for each other are so different. Like, you can hear it in our music. If you listen to a love song that men write for women, you hear things like, let me be your hero, baby. I will kiss away the pain. I will stand by you forever. And Bruno Mars has that song Grenade where he literally lists ways he would give his life for his woman. And what's a love song written by a woman to a man? You take me the way I am. So the contract that men give to women is, I will love you forever. You are my everything. I will give my life for you. And the contract that women give to men is, yep. Yeah, all that stuff, give it to me.
Thank you.
Right. So that's
hilarious.
Thanks. So it's taken me a long time to reconcile with that. And I gotta say, like, I'm having more fun on stage, which one of the things I heard consistently with because I did a bunch of contests, and I would always go back to find someone who was a judge and say, you know, what can I improve? What can I do? The feedback I constantly got was, you know, the compliment I heard was polished, and then the flip side of that, like what they were really saying, and what they'd say, you're polished, but it's like you're scripted, you know? So I've been fortunate enough to find a way to connect to like actually being in the moment more rather than telling a joke.
Right. So instead of just focusing on your material, you kind of let things come in.
Yeah. I get to actually perform more, which is kind of nice. And still trying to like really grow in that direction. Don't get me wrong. I still need to write more because like I'm proud of that first joke because it's a logical thought. And it's absurd, but I mean, it go from A to B to C. And the fact that I can take people where I want them to go, where it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. It's a ridiculous thought, but people are like, yeah, I'll buy the ticket. I'll take the ride. And when you get there, you know, you laugh. And that's like saying to me, hey, thanks for the trip. I'm glad we came. Like it blows me away that I can do that. And then to have the bit about women and my frustrations with them, like it's so, what blows me away about it is it's so mean-spirited. Like I don't mean it to be, but like it sounds really mean on some level. And to be okay with talking about things that really bug me, and finding the way to laugh about it. And then when people laugh at something that, like, I'm almost ashamed of that thought because I really don't hate women, but I'm frustrated. And when someone laughs, especially when it's women, that like, yeah, it's okay. It's okay to be frustrated. And you're not a freak. You're not a weirdo. You're not a hateful person. It's just, it is one of those things. Yeah, yeah, we totally do that.
It's a human thought, yeah.
Yeah, and that, to me, is that validation, that acceptance. That's the other side of it, is just like, oh, it's all right to have these thoughts. It's all right to feel these things. Like, one, the first one makes me kind of pat myself on the back, like, good for you. And the second one makes me breathe a sigh of relief, like, oh, huh.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking about stuff that some of it wasn't easy to talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on, man. You're right. There's some stuff I talked about that I really don't talk to anyone about it or talk about. And it's good for me to do that, because it just is.
We're all humans trying to make our way through, and we want to make a difference, and we want to be happy. And I think people that can find a job that does that and fulfills all those things, that is amazing to me.
That's a gift. I think that's a gift. I think that, to me, I agree. And I think that people who find that job, that's an argument for a higher power, because that's the only way to describe that, as is a gift from God.
So I don't know about you, but I really, really enjoy that episode. I think Dave is such an interesting dude. I mean, how many ballroom dance instructors / comedians do you know? So still, I think his story is not only compelling, but also really relatable. And although we talked about a lot of things, for me, this episode was about courage, or as Dave would call it, having balls. The balls to do what you love, even if it scares you. And I have no doubt that Dave is on the right path. And it was an honor to record our conversation. So thank you, Dave, for coming on the show. Oh, and before I go, Dave will be performing stand-up on Friday and Saturday on January 2nd and 3rd at the Joker's Wild Club on Worcester Street in New Haven, Connecticut. And both shows start at 8 p.m. And if you visit jokerswildclub.com, you can get more information. And if you like the podcast, please spread the word. The website for the show is employedpoet.com. All you do is click on where I work. And you can also download the episodes from the iTunes store. That is all. Happy Thanksgiving.